Thank you, DK. Interestingly enough, a lot of what I'm going to say you'll find is at least consistent with and maybe the same as what you've already heard from the others this morning. The our perspective, of course, is maybe a little different. We're, as I'll describe further, a satellite system that, and I'm one of the people that was very much involved in the responding to the demands for service after some of these natural disasters we've seen over the last few years. for those that don't know, our system, the Iridium system, is a global satellite system that, within the constraints of line of sight requirements, which you all know we need to see the open sky to communicate, and within the capacity constraints that we all live with, is capable of providing voice, short burst data, circuit switch data, and facsimile services. As DK implied, some of you that know the history know the system was built to serve a so-called professional traveler or high-end cellular user. We, after the first go-around, reoriented that to what Iridium calls the vertical markets, but it's made up of maritime, aviation, disaster communications, heavy construction, oil and gas, people that operate regularly in remote regions. And it just turns out that the kinds of capabilities that the system has, which I'll describe in more detail, work very well to serve the needs of those to respond to these disasters. I've, in the interest of time and not boring the audience, I've tried to sort of narrow the scope of this to only those aspects of what we do that I think is relevant to why you're all here. The I've got a couple slides here, maybe more than I should, that, just to make the point that our system was very much, very heavily used by people that responded to the restoration and human relief efforts. It just turns out in our system, for reasons I won't bore you with, that we're able to know within about 12 kilometers the location of every device, every handset, or every data device when it initiates a call on the network. And pictorially or graphically, we can show that traffic in the form of a little white dot each time a call is made. So the more calls that are made, the more white dots. And when you look at this globally, you can actually isolate activities, border disputes, fishing grounds, aeronautical traffic, in this case, the relief effort in the Gulf region. So this is a picture, a snapshot of what that traffic concentration looked like before Katrina. This is what it looked like afterwards. We didn't go through and do a careful analysis. We estimate about 8,000 to 10,000 of our units were in that region at this point in time. We saw about a 3,000% increase in traffic. It's one of the advantages of a system like ours in the business we call a demand-assigned system. It doesn't require any advance reservation of transponder capacity or leases or anything. It's purely demand-assigned where all the users on a particular satellite seize the capacity for the duration of their call. It goes back into the pool. this is a sort of a high-level graphic that shows our constellation of satellites. We have 66 satellites. They're in what we call a polar orbit. And one of the key features of this I've highlighted as a second bullet is it requires absolutely no local infrastructure support. It doesn't require electrical power. It doesn't require any local regional gateway. It doesn't require any water. It doesn't require anything. It's just a handset or a data device that's able to operate totally independent of surrounding conditions. And we've all seen probably more graphic and pictorial imagery of this Gulf situation than any other disaster we've ever seen. And you saw some of that this morning. You know that there just isn't anything in the early stages there to support any kind of equipment. And that's an area where it just happens our system is of great benefit. And I don't mean to say that it's the whole answer by any means. The satellite constellation that I showed a moment ago delivers this kind of a coverage. So I will tell you, you will not see this kind of a coverage pattern from any other system. I get criticized for saying that too often, but it's a total blanket of the earth all the time, so that since we don't know when disasters are going to occur, where they're going to occur, It's we're the one system that makes it possible to get on an airplane and go anywhere in the world and know that you have communications when you get there. The call path in the system is such that you can actually make calls from one handset to another, as you can see in this diagram, without the need for that call to transit any ground station at all. For the calls that go from the handset back to into the switch network, those calls get routed from satellite to satellite. Again, a unique part of the system, back to our ground station, which in this case is in Arizona. From there, it goes into the switch network in anywhere in the world. One of the enhancements that we have already fielded with DoD is a what we call push-to-talk or netted radio feature that makes it possible for multiple users to talk with one another in the case of on just a push-to-talk basis. So there's no dialing sequence. It's simply a number of users all in the same channel. You know, the presumption is it's a community of users all working on the same sort of effort and have a need to talk to each other. In phase one, which is now being trialed, those users need to be in some reasonable proximity to one another. In the second phase, it'll be possible for them to talk across wide regions of the world, again, on a push-to-talk basis. We have a variety of configurations that have been built to serve the needs of the users. I've only put a few of them here. We've got them multi-channel use for the idea there, and the way it gets used is to hook it to a PBX in a building so that anyone can pick up any phone in that building and make a phone call anywhere in the world without whether or not the local network's up or not. We started out with a handheld version of that telephone, which is what Iridium is most known for. We've got over on the right-hand side of this slide, vehicular mount. We also have units which are not relevant here for ships and for aircraft, helicopters, whatever. There are in here a number of slides that talk about the ways that Iridium's been used. It was heavily used after the Taiwan earthquake. The South Pole Rescue refers to a doctor who was in need of surgery, and they used our system as a way to communicate between the rescue aircraft and the people on the ground. I think many of you know that on the poles, there is no other system serves that area. So we were able to help in that example. Another example where we're used there is for the polar routes, which corporate jets and commercial aircraft and transport planes fly. I won't go through all of these, but suffice it to say that the system has been recognized and continues to be widely used in these relief efforts. This is also just another example of it during some of the earlier hurricanes in Florida and the Caribbean. There's no reason to go through all these. In the case, someone referred to this earlier, but one of the things that a lot of people don't know is that when the World Trade Center building went down, among the things on top of that building were cellular towers. So in addition to all the other congestion that would have been there, that system, the cellular system went down because the antenna went down in the building. We shipped a significant number of handsets up there to the law enforcement, both federal and local level, to help with the communications requirements. Same is true with the Pentagon. It's not so much the system was down, it's just that the cellular and landlines were congested. Our system operates independent, as I said earlier, of those systems. This, I guess, is the important thing. Just looking at this from our perspective, I think that there seems to be a universal recognition that we're not where we need to be as an industry to respond to these disasters. Looking at it from at least my perspective, what I see happening is that, at least at the federal level, and someone mentioned this earlier, there seems to be some criticism being levied at the industry or at the legislators or whomever for not solving this problem. And I agree with what someone said earlier, that the technology, satellite technology, has probably never been more visible to our general population than it is today because of these disasters. One of the things that is a little bit of concern is that there seems to be sort of a generic reference to satellite communications, and there seems to be this notion that somehow there's one system that's going to take care of all these problems. And I think that through the combination of the fact that the requirements are not the same between users, and not even for the same users over time, when you go from an initial arrival on site human sort of assistance into a restoration effort, the requirements vary. So I think it's going to take a variety of systems to solve this problem. And it's an area, I think, where we as an industry have to do a more responsible job or more thorough job of educating people about what it is that our system does, but also really what it doesn't do so well, because anyone in this business will tell you that, just as I can stand up here and talk about the attributes of our system as I did a moment ago, there are other requirements that other systems do better than ours. Ours was optimized for a particular kind of application, you know, one of them being when you leave your home base and you go anywhere in the world and you get off that airplane, maybe the first thing you want to do is call back to your home and say, I'm here, this is what I see, this is what I need. Another thing you're going to want to do probably for the whole time you're in that area is when you're moving around is communicate back to your home base with respect to your needs, what the needs are, the people that are there, and with other people in the region. Our system does that very well. But there are also requirements for which our system is not ideally suited for broadband data, full motion video, a lot of what the reporters have to do, even data circuits. Ours can do data at a slow rate, but we're not well suited for the higher data rate. So I just think we need to do a better job of explaining what we do and what we don't do. And I do think, notwithstanding all the discussion about spectrum allocation and a universal system and all that, I think in general, the technology exists, the systems are there, there is a lot of capacity. It's just a question of how it gets used and our the limitations at which we need to get away from and how we explain where we fit and where we don't. The second bullet on here, someone mentioned earlier, is that when Katrina hit, and again, although we all know that for some period of time it was a reasonable basis to expect it was going to hit, we were absolutely deluged with requirements for service and for equipment, and frankly, we couldn't meet them. We had the capacity in orbit. We didn't have enough handsets. We sell everything we sell through service providers. They didn't either. And for a disaster of that magnitude, I don't think we, as a network operator, will ever have enough equipment sitting there waiting for someone to buy it. And even if we did, as someone mentioned earlier, there's more to just getting the equipment out there. The people have to know how to use it. And our system, because as I said earlier, it was really not built for these industrial markets. It was first built for the consumer market. It operates about as simply as a cellular telephone. But it does need to be outside in clear sight where a cellular phone does not. The dialing sequence is a little bit different because it's an international dialing plan. And either or both of those, if the user doesn't know that, cause the equipment not to work and cause it not to work in an environment in which there's no one to go ask. So I think it's important that the equipment be positioned, and as someone mentioned earlier, that there'd be experience on that equipment. It's not complicated, but someone mentioned earlier trying to make that equipment available to people to use in more routine circumstances probably makes a lot of sense, and we would support that. There are applications beyond simply voice, which our system's capable of providing. We have examples of fire departments from here that were actually able to track the location of their people and their assets during the whole time they're in that affected area. But again, that requires some training, some familiarization on how to do that. And I guess enough people have talked about the interoperability. I think that, as I said earlier, it's going to continue to be necessary that multiple systems be deployed to support these different requirements. There are platforms today, I'm not terribly familiar with them, that make it possible to communicate between systems which otherwise would not be connectable. That probably in the immediate term is something that needs to have some more research done on. So I'll stop there. I guess we'll have some time for questions later. Thank you all.